Satsvarup Das Goswami. Now, maybe Archidik can correct me if I'm reading in the right place here. The main article, a summary of a lecture given by Srila Prabhupada, is based on notes taken by Omapati, and he's quoted here. It has been said that when we wake up and when we go to sleep, we should beat our mind 1,000 times with a shoe. When the mind says things like, "Why sing Hare Krishna? Why not take LSD?" we should beat it with the same shoe. However, if we always think of Krishna, no beating will be necessary. The mind will be our best friend. And there was an article by Hayagriva, "Flip Out and Stay." Hayagriva had quoted liberally from Hart Crane and Walt Whitman, and he's quoting here. No wonder so many collegiates are trying to flip out permanently on super drugs. Perhaps this is their way of saying, we don't want any part of this hell you've made for yourselves. So they use psychedelics as a springboard to propel themselves into different realms. But the drug flip is only temporary. It is temporary because it is artificial. One really begins to wonder where all these trips are leading. Hayagriva concluded that Krishna Kirtan is the quickest way to flip out without coming down. He quote, "Your associates will think you mad. This is the first sign of progress. Just let others be mad for Maya. The old ephemeral lures of women and gold, but you be mad instead for the reality." In the back of the magazine was an ad for Swamiji's essays, Krishna the Reservoir of Pleasure and Who is Crazy, and a notice, "Soon to be printed Gita Upanishad or Bhagavad Gita as it is, translated and with commentaries by Swami Bhaktivedanta." Prabhupada's first and main attraction to his editors had been that they should produce the magazine regularly, every month. Even if they didn't know how to sell the copies, or even if they only turned out two pages, they had to continue bearing the standard. He called Hayagriva to his room and presented him a complete three-volume set of Srimad Bhagavatam. On the front page of each volume, he had written, "To Sriman Hayagriva Das Brahmachari, with my blessings, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." Hayagriva was grateful and mentioned that he had not been able to afford them. "That's all right," Prabhupada said. "Now you compile this back to Godhead. Work sincerely and make it as big as Time magazine." Prabhupada had big plans. Make it as big as Time magazine. Prabhupada wanted all his disciples to take part in it. "Don't be dull," he said. "Write something." He wanted to give his disciples back to Godhead for their own preaching. Brahmananda and Gargamuni took the first issues out that same night on bicycles, riding to every head shop on the Lower East Side, all the way to 14th Street and as far west as the West Village, until they had distributed all 100 issues. This was an increase in the preaching. Now all his students could take part in the work, typing, editing, writing, assembling, selling. It was his preaching, of course, but he wasn't alone anymore. So we'll stop there, and on to Down Under, Australia. Actually, the festival in Australia had been planned to have a temple opening, a restaurant opening. It was the 25th year of Hare Krishna in Australia celebration, and the Rath Yatra all in one weekend. But it so happened that the hall had been booked for something else, the hall in which the Rath Yatra end of the Rath Yatra festival was going to take place. So that had to be put back another week. So Adhirama, who was the temple president in Sydney, decided that instead of trying to do everything that weekend to keep the weekend that had already been scheduled to have the temple rededication on the same weekend and then have the Rath Yatra the following week. So he decided to have a whole week of Krishna consciousness festivals. Hare Krishna week, in other words. So that was the way it was billed, Hare Krishna week. And they made a lot of publicity. Lots of posters and leaflets were handed out. And especially in the area where the festival is going to take place. So it became a week-long event. The first one was the opening of the temple. So he had arranged for a big tent to be constructed, a self-standing tent in the parking lot. This actually was the temple, a branch of the main temple in Sydney for a long time. It was in North Sydney, and it's at the intersection of two streets. They're both four-line streets, two vehicles going in each direction on both intersection, both streets. So it's a very busy intersection. And in this tent were four jagya pits with ISKCON Brahmins performing various dedication ceremonies. They installed a dome on top of the temple, and there was an abhishek for the deities, and the number of devotees that were traveling came there. Devamrita Swami, you may know of, and Jaipataka Maharaj, Prabhavishnu Swami, Ramai Swami, and many devotees came who hadn't been seen very much around that area for a long time because it was a big event. So the celebration was a very elaborate one. The deities of Radha Gopinath, they're marble deities about 12 inches high, and they also have small Jagannath deities and brass Gorni Thai deities there. There was a big abhishek ceremony, and when this dome was installed on the top of the temple by Jaipataka Maharaj, there was a big kirtan which went up on the roof of the temple and made all the installation and so on. There was also a dinner, a big feast on the first weekend. Lots of VIPs were invited, and the counselor, a councilwoman for that area, came, and one of the women who heads up, or she's the woman who heads up the National Liberation for Animals, I'm not sure what it's called, came to this dinner. She's also a video or a television personality star of sitcoms. Her name was Linda Stoner, and her husband, they came. They also wrote a very favorable review of the Hare Krishna movement and its what it does in Australia. So they were there, and there was a big dinner, and a very festive atmosphere with lots of kirtan. Definitely no silence. There was a shanai player, one of these 3 foot, 4 foot long shanais, and drummers that play with sticks were part of the jagya. And many of you may have known Gaur Keshava. He was conducting the jagya. So that was a kind of a Saturday and Sunday weekend of events. And then it was actually, as billed as Hare Krishna Week, it was meant to be a festival in which people would understand the value of the Hare Krishna movement for the general populace. So that week and throughout the next Sunday, devotees conducted radio interviews, about 12 different radio shows featured devotees. There were 3 or 4 newspaper articles, several television stations, broadcast events that were going on. And the culmination, of course, was the Rathyatra Festival, which was down a main street called Oxford Street. I think it was about 13 years ago. It was the first time it ever happened in ISKCON, that it was inevitable that the Rathyatra, being such a big Jagannath cart, ran over somebody and actually killed a lady, an older Indian lady. And it created a lot of negative publicity, even though, of course, her family, not of course, but they were special people, and they thought that she was liberated by this act of leaving her body under the feet of Lord Jagannath. But as a result of that, the devotees didn't apply to have a festival in Sydney again for all this time. It was about 13 years. So finally they'd been having them up north, much smaller venues. So they decided to applied for permission, and it so happened that when they applied for permission, the same constable or police commissioner who gave permission for the first festival that had the accident was the same person. And he was very congenial and gave permission and said, well, you know, these things happen, don't worry about it. Just be careful that people don't get too close to the wheels. So they had the procession up Oxford Street in this Paddington area. Paddington is a very kind of upscale area, and the first temple in Sydney was on that street. We went by it, and because it's very rainy, especially this time of year, and Sydney's a place that has very unpredictable weather, the end of the festival, all the events were held indoors. Maybe we'll show you some video of this. I know most of the devotees went up to New Vrindavan, I think, for the weekend, but maybe we'll have some time over the weekend to show some of the video. So it's very well organized. The cart route was about 2 miles, maybe 3 miles long, went up a hill on Oxford Street, and there was a brass band in the beginning of the parade. A devotee wrote some scores for this band to play different Hare Krishna melodies. Hare Krishna, like the morning melody sang, and a few others. And it was very well done. It was a marching band with trumpets and trombones and tubas and so forth, and drums. And they had the sheet music right in front of them. So they led the parade. And there were several banners and bullocks pulled a little cart full of produce. They were from the nearby farm called New Gokula to demonstrate the simple living and high thinking aspect of Krishna consciousness. And the chariot was very beautifully decorated. Now, one unique thing about this cart is that the Jagannath deity who adorned the top of this cart is about 8.5 to 9 feet tall. He was brought into the temple actually a few days before the festival, and we had an Abhishek ceremonies. In order to bathe this deity, you had to stand up on a platform about 3 feet off the ground if you wanted to bathe the top of his head. So huge. This is the same deity that rode in the cart years ago when the accident occurred. So he could be seen very clearly by everyone. So many devotees pulled the ropes, and it was at this point that a number of devotees that hadn't been seen for several years appeared and wanted to pull the ropes. And they did, of course. So there was a large number of devotees. There was that float. And was there another float besides the one pulled? I guess that was it. There was the band that one pulled by the bullocks, and then Lord Jagannath's chariot. So we went past the Paddington Town Hall, which was where the event, the main ending event took place. Prabhupada actually spoke there, and we heard a lecture the morning after Rathiatra of Prabhupada speaking on the 7th chapter, 1st verse of Bhagavad Gita. Very nice lecture. So we went past the town hall downhill and then came back up, and the festival ended there. And as often happens in Sydney, it began to rain towards the end of the festival. It started out with a little drizzle, and then it got a little more drizzly and kind of went into a bit of a rain shower. So it was good because it was indoors and many people came in. It was a shopping day, a Saturday. Many people came in from the rain last Saturday and took part in the festival. So when they came in, it was quite a large hall, about 10 times the size of this room. There was a free prasadam distribution, a big painting display, and a big stage where Lord Jagannath was installed right after the festival. And lots of chairs for people to sit. And on the other side of the chairs were other displays. There was a photograph display of different aspects of Krishna consciousness in Australia. Another photograph display showing portraits of different devotees who lived in the area, about maybe 20 or so. Another display of books. Another display of news clippings of news that had happened in Australia over the years. And then we had a book booth where Kurma was there selling his book. He has a famous book in Australia, Great Vegetarian Dishes. He was autographing them. And then we had another table where we were selling Divine Nature and autographing those. So Kurma in Australia is something of a celebrity. His TV show, Cooking with Kurma, is shown at 7 o'clock Saturday night, every Saturday night, 13-part series for 13 weeks. It's still running for a few weeks. So he's so well known there because it's broadcast all over Australia on a big network that he can hardly go from the temple out to the car without being besieged for autographs. He's actually that popular. So this particular Rathiatra had a message, and the message was that the Hare Krishna movement can improve your life by showing you how to start by eating right. When Kurma spoke at the Rathiatra festival inside, he gave all of the different reasons why it was valuable to follow the Vedic diet. And because he was a celebrity, people listened. The event was quite attention-grabbing because there was good entertainment. A devotee named Hari Bandhu has a band which is popular. He won a songwriting contest about 2 years ago, South Sea Songwriting Contest. So his band is very commercial and very appealing. All his songs are Krishna conscious. So he was the first act There was a very good master of ceremonies that kept everything moving. There were dancers from the Gurukul. There were some dancers who danced Bharatanatyam that were very good. And one of the speakers was the member of parliament for that state. It's kind of like the equivalent of a state senator in this country. So she spoke very nicely, and because she was kind of part of the overall theme, she said that she was, the words she used were, "I was graced to serve the 2 millionth Hare Krishna Food for Life meal on May 8, 1990, I think it was. She remembered the date, and she spoke very highly of the devotees, said that they were creating a very good atmosphere, and they were very well known for feeding underprivileged people in Australia. And when she finished her talk, she asked one of the devotees if the farm, New Gokula, ever accommodated visitors, that she'd like to go out there for a weekend and have a little spiritual break from her very tedious job. And one of the other speakers was the head of the Vegetarian Society, who said that he thought that Prabhupada and the Hare Krishna movement were doing more to popularize vegetarianism than any other organization in the world. Very nice speaker. And then there were some other devotional songs by Krishna Premi, who sings and makes records and tapes and CDs and so on, and it has a very nice group. So all in all, it was something that people enjoyed spiritually. They had had a very good time. They got to meet Korma. They got to hear Hari Bandhu's band and partake in all different kinds of festivities, and they ate and ate and ate and ate lots of prasadam. That was pre-prasadam. It was served to them. So that was the first big event after the original Rath Yatra, and it's intended to be an annual event now in Sydney. Big Rath Yatra, big festival, and big feasting. Be an annual event down there. Did I leave anything out? Bhakti Rachel was there too, Bhakti and Rachel. Yeah? If any questions about this or the verse or Vivamrita? Jai Keshava. Well, it said that if one can chant, especially during the Brahma Muhurta hours, that it has greater potency. Like between 4 and 8 in the morning, if you can chant at that time, that those are very auspicious hours, and whatever is done at that time has greater than ordinary potency. So it's been recommended, and also even sometimes people chant earlier than that, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning before things get started. And we know that anything we do, even at that time, because our mind has not become filled up with a lot of other thoughts about what we might be needing to do that day, it has an extra special potency to it. It's a deeper concentration because the mind is clear of thinking of a lot of other thoughts. So Prabhupada recommended that, especially in the morning and the evening, hearing and chanting is very, very important. Because so much activity is taken up during the other part of the day in expanding Krishna consciousness and preaching. But before we take rest too, because the mind is in a somewhat dormant state, it helps us dream about Krishna and Krishna consciousness, because it's the last thing we think of before we take rest. So in the morning and the evening, hearing and chanting is especially recommended as being especially potent. Of course, Lord Chaitanya says there's no hard and fast rules. One can chant anywhere, anytime, and even different words sometimes, but this time is especially good because we understand that the Hare Krishna mantra is vibrated from the spiritual world. Kara Prema Dana Harinama Sankirtana. It's not something we generate ourselves, but we're tapping into a vibration that's continuously being broadcast from the spiritual world. So when our minds are fresh and clear and we're in this early Brahma Muhurta period, it's easier to tap into Krishna, to the vibration of the holy name without being affected by other sounds and other thoughts. So it's a good time to chant. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Jabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Na bala bagiri baradhari gopi jana gopi jana bala bagiri baradhari. Yashoda Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Balava Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Dana Braja Jana Yamuna Tira Vanajari Yamuna Tira Vanajari Jaya Radha Madhava Hare 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 Rama.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada,
Jaya Vishwabhad, Paramansa, Paribhaja, Kacharya, Stavatara, Sarashi, Shima, this divine grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj, Shri Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Jaya Vishnupad, Paramahansa, Paribhavika, Chaukya, Stavatara, Sarashi, Srimad, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti, Siddhanta, Saraswati, Thakur Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Ananta Koti, Vaishnava, Vrinda, Ki Jai. ISKCON, Founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Thakur, Ki Jai. Prem, Sikaho, Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Sri Adaita, Gadara, Sri Vasadi, Gaur, Bhakta, Vrinda, Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyam Kundara Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Navadvip Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Ayodhya Dham Ki Jai. Tulasi Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Ganga Maya Ki Jai. Jamuna Maya Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Nama Sankirtan Ki Jai. Shri Shri Brihat Madanga Ki Jai. Transcendental Prasadam Distribution Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Madana Mohan Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Centennial Ki Jai. Shri Nuhastinapura Dham Ki Jai. Shyamaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasutim Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayat Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Third canto, 28th chapter, 5th text. Monam Sadasana Jaya Stairyam Pranajaya Shanai Pratyaharash Chindriyanam Vishayan Manasa Siddhi. Oh, we can read it at the beginning.
It's up to you. Priya did it that way.
Okay, you read it at the end. Maunam Sudasana Jaya.
Maunam Sudasana Jaya.
Stairyam Prana Jaya Shanai.
Dharyam Pranajaya Shanai Patyaharaschindriyanam Patyaharaschindriyanam Vishayan Manasariri Vishayan Manasariri Maunam.
Silence.
Silence.
Sat.
Sat.
Good.
Good.
Asana.
Asana.
Yogic postures.
Yogic postures.
Jaya.
Jaya.
Controlling.
Control.
Staryam.
Staryam.
Steadiness.
Steadiness.
Pranajaya.
Pranajaya.
Controlling the life air.
Shanai,
Shanai,
gradually.
Pratyahara, withdrawal. Cha, and. Indriyanam, of the senses. Vishayat, from the senses. I'm sorry, it should be from the sense objects.
Manasa,
with the mind.
Idi,
on the heart. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. One must observe silence, acquire steadiness by practicing different yogic postures, control the breathing of the vital air, withdraw the senses from sense objects, and thus concentrate the mind on the heart. Responsibly, one must observe silence, acquire steadiness, by practicing different yogic postures, control the breathing of the vital air, withdraw the senses from sense objects, and thus concentrate the mind on the heart. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The yogic practices in general and Hatha Yoga in particular are not ends in themselves. They are means to the end of attaining steadiness. First, one must be able to sit properly, and then the mind and attention will become steady enough for practicing yoga. Gradually, one must control the circulation of vital air, and with such control, he will be able to withdraw the senses from sense objects. In the previous verse, it is stated that one must observe celibacy. The most important aspect of sense control is controlling sex life. That is called brahmacharya. By practicing the different sitting postures and controlling the vital air, one can control and restrain the senses from unrestricted sense enjoyment. Oma ginati mirandasya gananjana salakaya chaksurin nidam jena tasmai shri guruve namah sri chaitanya manovistam stapitam jena bhutare svayam rupa kadamai ham darati svaparantikam. In this verse, Lord Kapila is enumerating some of the ways, some of the hints, some of the advices by which we can better practice Krishna consciousness and by which we can engage in devotional service. Prabhupada lectured on these verses quite extensively, and part of them were made into a book, Teachings of Lord Kapila. So in many ways, these verses contain the essence of the secrets of devotional service by explaining the sort of nuts and bolts wherewithal how to engage in proper and better devotional service. So these are different ways in which we can enhance devotional service. He discusses silence, that one must observe silence. In devotional service, silence is not in the ordinary way we understand silence, that's always to undertake a vow of mauna or never speaking. Such very quiet contemplation was possible in such a yuga when people could undertake meditation for 70,000 years, when their lifespan was 100,000 years, and it was possible to still the mind in various ways. But devotional service in the Kali Yuga is meant for vibrating the transcendental sounds Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. People who don't actually understand the purport of the Bhagavatam often think that meditation is still a possibility in this age, but it's actually not. Actually, I was talking to one lady who's come here many times and from India, and she said that because it's still very commonly thought of where she comes from, Gujarat, that meditation and spiritual thoughts, contemplation on deities and other transcendental subject matters should be a matter of very quiet, private, contemplative action. In other words, one just sits and very silently meditates or views the deity or tries to think of some spiritual thoughts. So she told me that it took her many, many visits to this temple to become comfortable with the fact that there was always a lot of going on, a lot of sound vibration going on. And now she's sort of converted that bhakti yoga is better than silent meditation. So people sometimes, even in Bombay, I remember when the temple was started there, Prabhupada used to complain, used to tell us that the neighbors thought we were a nuisance, even in India, that because there was always chanting going on, that this was a nuisance. So this, I mean, even if you go to Bombay, sometimes you're trying to have a little talk with someone, that because the temple and the rest of the building is all interconnected, the sound of Hare Krishna is, it's almost going 24 hours, it's vibrating and bouncing off the marble walls very loudly, and sometimes it even to the devotees it seems like it might be a bit of a nuisance. But actually, the vibration is completely purifying the atmosphere, spiritualizing and sanctifying everything and everyone within. So silence from the point of view of a bhakta is speaking about Krishna, Krishna Gata, is vibrating the holy name and hearing the holy name of Krishna, hearing sounds of Krishna's devotees always constantly reverberating. So it's necessary to surround oneself with this transcendental sound vibration in order to be purified. Because actually what happens when one tries to silence the mind is it becomes filled with thoughts and filled with other sounds. There are so many sounds going through the air with radio and just the general noise that exists in Kali Yuga of automobiles and other sounds that it's almost impossible to find a silent situation. So in Kali Yuga, it's been recommended by these sages that one can counteract all of these negative sounds, all of this babbling, which has no end or no goal, by putting out a very positive sound vibration. So when one hears, even without any prior knowledge, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, it naturally awakens the Krishna consciousness, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, that is within the heart of every living entity. It's like a wake-up call. Sometimes people become very angry at their alarm clocks and throw them across the room. Or there's a kind of alarm clock you can buy now that you can speak into it, and whatever you say, it'll turn off the alarm and it'll go into a snooze mode. So most people, they just say shut up as soon as they hear the alarm go off. One time when I was having trouble getting up in the morning, I had a clock radio, and I found that at 4 o'clock in the morning there was a certain station that played marching music with the marching bands, very loud with tubas and glockenspiels, you know, very, very loud. So I put it on the other side of the room where I was sleeping and turned the volume all the way up and tuned it to that station so that when it was 4 o'clock, this very deafening John Philip Sousa music would come really obnoxiously blaring across the room, and I'd have to jump up and run across the room with my heart beating boom, 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 real fast and go and turn it off. So then there was no question of going back to sleep after that because it was very intense. Anyway, that's not maybe a very good example of transcendental sound vibration, but the the message is that silence, which is actually one of the ways a devotee is characterized, is met by seeing that the tongue is always vibrating. We saw even with Prabhupada, sometimes when he would be yawning, his tongue would be moving because he would be chanting the holy name, the sound vibration of the holy name. And of course, devotees are not unnecessarily talkative. By silence, it means they speak about Krishna and they don't just talk aimlessly. They don't talk about things like that don't have any direction or any end in promoting Krishna consciousness that has no direction. Prabhupada, I remember he praised Satsarupa Maharaj once for being what he called a silent worker. So devotees are not unnecessarily talkative. If they speak, they vibrate the holy name, or they talk about things related to Krishna and their service. And they're by nature not overly talkative. Sometimes people have a tendency to just talk, to fill up the gap, to run off at the mouth, as they say, and not really come to any conclusions. So silence is one of the qualities of a devotee. It's one of the symptoms of being very peaceful and very self-satisfied, because one understands there's a happiness that's within. One doesn't have to fill up the ether with sound vibrations that are meaningless, that don't have any direction, that aren't advancing the cause of devotional service. Then he mentions steadiness by practicing different yogic postures. In some temples, like in Hong Kong, they have a practice of Hatha Yoga, where devotees are teaching newcomers how to practice Hatha Yoga. This has been going on for about 15 years. People appreciate this, and it's one of the only ways that the people in China and Hong Kong can understand that there's something valuable in the practice of devotional service. So they're introduced to Krishna consciousness by being taught how to do different asanas, different yoga asanas, and they gradually understand that this is part of a bigger process of yoga, a greater process, and they're gradually introduced to bhakti yoga. So one becomes steady by practicing yoga, and although this is a very beginning, Prabhupada mentions that yogic practices in general and hatha yoga in particular are not ends in themselves. The end is when someone becomes steady, or nisochatina kankshiti, that one is free from desire, from intense desire to achieve things. Nisochatina kankshiti, one is steady from lamenting, from hankering and lamenting. And mam chayove bicharena bhakti yogena sevate, he becomes steady in all circumstances. Even when great difficulties present themselves, the devotee is very steady. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita which describes how all the different rivers flow down into the ocean. And even though the ocean would apparently be agitated by so many different waters, it never overflows its banks. It's a symbol of pacifism, a very steady calm. Another example is the flame. The flame is always very steady. It burns, but it's always very steady. So the mind becomes very pacified and steady, like the ocean and like the flame, when there is no excessive hankering, there's no excessive desire, there's no excessive lamentation. And one sees that this whole process of yoga means to be one with, or to join in union with, or to yoke, to become linked to Krishna, linked very powerfully to Krishna. That's the meaning of yoga. So in yoga, as we understand it, it means that we engage in bhakti yoga. Prabhupada has told us, and we read in the Bhagavad Gita and other works, that if one practices hatha yoga, it is only a beginning. If one practices raja yoga, or mantra yoga, or kriya yoga, or karma yoga, various dhyana yoga, various types of yoga are described in the sixth chapter, still, bhakti yoga, bhakti mama vijanati yavanyash chashmi tattvataha, that bhakti yoga is the only way that Krishna can actually be understood. So it is a fact that in yoga, bhakti yoga is the topmost. And by practicing bhakti yoga properly, one automatically engages in all the other forms of yoga. So if one dances, which is part of the bhakti yoga process, Shishi Radhamanana Mohan Ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gornitai Ki Jai. Dancing is a very integral part, actually, of bhakti yoga, just as chanting is. Prabhupada had advised the devotees in Calcutta once that they should conduct an exhibition in the Victoria Memorial. It's a very popular tourist attraction in Calcutta. Big dome, a big fancy building. And they proposed to Prabhupada that we should have a week-long festival here with kirtan and prasadam. And Prabhupada said, yes, and you should have dancing. And he said that if you dance in this hall regularly every night, all the people of Calcutta will become very attracted. So as Lord Chaitanya taught, and he was sometimes dancing in a very wild fashion, especially during the Rath Yatra, but and many times he would be jumping and dancing in an apparently mad fashion. This is a form, actually, of Hatha Yoga, because it causes the body to stretch and move in different ways, and causes the body to perspire, all which is very good for the health. Also, Prana Yoga is practiced in the practice of Hatha Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, because it causes us to breathe a certain way. Actually, in performing the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, a very precise form of breath control occurs. I was once talking with a neurologist, and he was criticizing devotees for walking and chanting, because some were walking for various types of cardiovascular exercise. So this man was saying how there's a very specific type of prana yoga or pranayama that takes place when one chants the mantra, and that it was the best type of prana would be to chant and concentrate very in a sitting posture and concentrate on the sounds, because the prana yoga would be properly met. Of course, we do everything. We walk around and we chant, sometimes move around in different ways, but actually it's a type of pranayama or prana yoga. And then there's other types of yoga, meditative yoga, kriya yoga, raja yoga, which talk about concentrating the mind on a certain point. And actually, the mind is so fickle, so chinchala, so restless, that it's very difficult for even a few moments for the mind to remain fixed on any one thing. And meditators try to fix the mind on anything, on a spot, or they try to meditate on a quiet place and fix the mind on that. But actually this type of meditation is not possible, not for an elongated period. Whereas if one chants the Hare Krishna mantra, one's mind is immediately focused on the sound, because Krishna and his name are non-different. We were mentioned this morning about this exhibit in the gallery in the Smithsonian. We were quite amazed because Nudaman Rasapriya and I went to the grand opening of this gallery's exhibit on what they call puja. It's a puja exhibition. It's called puja. So the curator of this museum came out and spoke, and then the assistant curator came out and spoke. And the speech that the assistant curator gave was talking about how important it was for people to have a personal deity in their worship. And she'd come to this conclusion by visiting homes of Hindus who lived in this area and who had deities in their homes. Some had Ganesh, some had Krishna, some had Lord Shiva. But what she was most impressed with was the fact that they had a very strong emotional attachment to their deity, whoever it might have been, Vishnu or Lakshmi or Durga. And therefore, a large part of her talk in inaugurating this exhibition in the pre-opening was to say how important it was that people have a personal deity to worship. So in this exhibition, you can see these deities being worshipped: Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Gornitai, and Radhaman and Mohan. Vishaka is worshipping them, and it says Krishna Temple, or Temple to Krishna, Potomac, Maryland. This was part of the speech, that this type of worship of a personal deity is very, very important. So again, bhakti yoga is darshan, it's steadiness, it's all the different yogas combined. And if you have actually the opportunity, which we have, to see Krishna face to face, to know that's actually Krishna, that's really Lord Chaitanya it's really Lord Ramchandra, then this is perfect meditative yoga. One's actually able to fix the mind on the deity. And the mind becomes so purified that all thoughts that are un-Krishna conscious or inebriated in some way with material contamination cannot enter the mind. It's because the mind becomes fixed in the form of the Lord. And in meditation, the deity can actually become part of the meditation in the mind, just as the form of the deity is in marble, or it can be in the form of jewels, or in sand, or in paint, in a painting. So in these different ways, the deity is, or in earth, these are mentioned in Prabhupada's books, that deity can be worshipped in a bona fide way. So even in the mind, if one is unable or doesn't have the opportunity to worship a personal deity in the home or the ashram or in the temple, then the deity can be worshipped in the mind or through a picture. So we instruct people in their homes, if they don't have a deity, to at least they can have a picture of Radha Krishna, a picture of Lord Chaitanya, a picture of Srila Prabhupada in the disciplic succession, and this way the mind can actually be fixed on the deity. And this is a perfect form of Raja Yoga, or that form of yoga, or Kriya Yoga, sometimes it's called, a form of meditating. So that form of yoga is automatically practiced. Control of the breathing of the vital air is also automatically practiced in Bhakti Yoga. Actually, it is said at the end of the sixth chapter, Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmanam shradavan bhajate yomam samayuktatamo mata, that of all those different types of yogis or persons practicing yoga, the person whose mind is continuously fixed on me is the highest of all yogis because he's practicing the perfect yoga. So Bhakti Yoga, in many different ways, we learn, encompasses every other form of yoga. It's very popular now, yoga. It's a word that people understand. It's an English word. They have yoga breaks sometimes in the workplace. And the basic understanding is that it's a way to exercise the body. But actually, it means coming very closely into contact with the Lord and developing a personal relationship with the Lord. That's what really the meaning of yoga means. Withdrawing the senses from sense objects, and brahmacharya is mentioned. Withdrawing the objects from sense objects is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, that one has to, at some point, withdraw the senses, like the tortoise, it's mentioned, draws the working senses, the arms are withdrawn within the shell. So similarly, the mind can withdraw the perceiving senses, and this is necessary in this material world. As one develops in bhakti yoga, at the same time one becomes indifferent, so to speak, or aloof from the allurements of material nature. So this sometimes means having to consciously turn one's attentions away from various attractions and allurements in the material world. Just as one becomes more and more advanced in Krishna consciousness, one loses a taste for anything material. And even though in this very opulent part of the world there are many types of attractions constantly impinging on the mind, a yogi, a bhakti yogi, is withdrawing the senses and concentrating those, turning them inward on the soul, on the super soul, where real pleasure comes from. So as soon as there's an attraction for some kind of worldly pleasure, the bhakti yogi turns those senses inside, just turns them around 180 degrees and focuses on the form of Krishna in the mind, or begins to chant the Maha Mantra, and through purification of the tongue and the ears, begins to hear and concentrate all the attention on the pleasure-giving potency of the Lord, which is known as Ram or Rama, the pleasure-giving potency, or the attractive potency known as Krishna. That form of yoga is also then withdrawing. So there are two aspects in Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga that we read about sometimes. One is to always remember Krishna, never forget him. One is to always accept everything favorable and reject everything unfavorable. So the favorable thing is to associate with devotees, to read Srimad Bhagavatam, to practice Krishna consciousness through preaching, through serving devotees, through living in a holy place, and at the same time becoming aloof from and instinctively turning away from any desires or attractions that impinge upon the mind in a negative way, that are purposeless talks or very bright and beautiful people and things, music and so many other allurements that are meant to keep us captivated and trapped within the material world. So these are some of the ways in which Lord Kapila is instructing us, some of the secrets about how bhakti yoga can be more successfully practiced. So he says, withdrawing the senses from the sense objects and thus concentrate the mind on the heart. So to concentrate the mind on the heart, which is the sitting place of the soul, is where real happiness comes from. And in bhakti yoga, real happiness is from within. So Prabhupada says that these yoga practices are not ends in themselves, but they are meant for creating a sense of developing devotional service for Krishna. And gradually, the vital airs become controlled. It is possible to practice celibacy or brahmacharya, and then all the senses become controlled. Well, Prabhupada stresses here, he mentions the importance of, he says the most important aspect of sense control is controlling sex life. We've also heard that controlling the tongue, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, is the center of enjoyment. If that can be controlled, then the other senses can be controlled. In Krishna consciousness, one of its unique features is that this type of sense control is being propagated, is being advanced as something that is very important in life. Among the many different organizations that practice some kind of meditation, very few actually preach or practice sense control to the degree of controlling sex life. But Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada stressed, means actually controlling that. And it creates great power to be able to control this urge. Sometimes Prabhupada spoke about how Gandhi was very powerful because he was able to be celibate for so long. So this is actually unique in Krishna consciousness, with maybe some minor exceptions. Devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement are actually practicing celibacy. Even in married life, celibacy is being practiced because sex life is meant for only the propagation of children. So even in that division, even in the grihastha community, very strict sense control is being practiced. This is unique, and because it is only possible because there's actually a higher taste, because in material life this is definitely the highest taste, sex life. But by understanding and practicing devotion to Krishna, then the pure form of sex life is experienced, and one comes to meditate on the form of Radha and Krishna together, that this is the supreme version of conjugal relationships. And when one can begin to appreciate that this is the supreme conjugal understanding, or the supreme understanding of what conjugal relationships are, then gradually the desire to engage in such things in a material way, which is a very perverse form of pure sex life, one becomes gradually indifferent and aloof to such allurements, even in grihastha life. So Prabhupada recommends this. One can control and restrain the senses from unrestricted sense enjoyment by practicing brahmacharya. So I'm going to read a little from the Prabhupada Lilamrita, and then I'll take a few minutes to talk about my visit in Australia. Some devotees have asked me about it, and I'll give you a little glimpse into what some things that went on down there.